Good evening and welcome to the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. This is April 7th. And with that, let me have some announcements that I need to make. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of services which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in or the internet-based options, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. A reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you're ready to speak. Make sure your cameras are on and you're unmuted. When you're done with your item, please remute and turn your cameras off. Members of the public may comment as to the items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item two. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by their name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. And with that, we will... the procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I'll introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then will come to a consensus whether to move this item onto the board for consideration. With that, we will go to item one, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. And if you'll please stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item two is public comments. Are there any members of the public that wish to address any items under this committee's jurisdiction that are not on the agenda this evening?
Chairman Cooper, seeing none.
Very good. Thank you. Item three is to recommend approval of a resolution for construction contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation and a purchase order to Woodward and Curran Incorporated for construction management and inspection services. And three, a purchase order to Lee and Rowe Incorporated for engineering services during construction for the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant Washwater Return and Sludge Systems Project. With that, I will go to Mr. Mayo.
Thank you very much. We're going to have Shadi Vader present this one. He's the project manager for this project.
Very good.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Shadi Vader. I'm a senior engineer here in the engineering section. And this evening, I am pleased to present to you the bid opening results for the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant Washwater Return and Sludge Systems Project. This project will upgrade the plant's wash, water, and sludge collection processes at the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant. Once complete, this project will help us meet important operational goals and add flexibility when operating the plant. It will also maximize and improve multiple other processes throughout the plant. So before we start the presentation, I would like to welcome Mr. Michael Maurer, who's from the agency's legal counsel, Bess and Krieger. Mike will be able to, is available to answer any legal questions the committee members may have. And we also have Rafael Polito with us in attendance. Rafael is the water treatment manager for the agency, and he oversees the two treatment plants and the operators. So with that, Liz, if you please, let's bring up the presentation. We'll get right started right on it. All right, next slide, please. Great, thank you so much. So here's the location map showing the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant. The plant is located at 32700 Lake Hughes Road in Castaic, California. The plant can treat up to 56 million gallons per day of water stored in Castaic Lake. Next slide, please. So here's an overall site plan for the Earl Schmidt. I tried to focus on the area where most of the work is going to happen. So we highlighted that in yellow. Some of the components and areas which are included in this project. Major additions include adding two new basins to increase wash water storage from the existing 800,000 gallons to a little bit over 2 million gallons. And we are also going to add a new sludge thickener tank and a new sludge drying bed. We will also make changes and improvements throughout the plant to the electrical components and to the lab area. Next slide, please. All right, so this project was advertised on planned bids beginning on November 10th of 2021. We also advertised the bid in the Signal newspaper on November 13th, 20, and 27th of 2021. Bids were electronically opened and received on planned bids on February 23rd of 2022. We received 8 construction bids. Pacific Hydrotech Corporation's bid came in at $17,526,700. Overall, the top 3 bidders are within 5% of each other, and the second bidder was only about 1.2% from the lowest bidder. The engineer's estimate for this project is $18 million. And we did work with Pacific Hydrotech before. They built a couple of projects for us. The latest was actually the NWELS PFAS project. Next project. Next slide, please. So on March 15th of 2022, staff received an official bid protest letter from Blois Construction Incorporated, Inc. The letter is attached to your package this evening. Blois claims that the bid from both Pacific Hydrotech Corp. and GEC Construction have failed to comply with the bidding instructions and therefore should be deemed unresponsive, and the contract should be awarded to Blois. After we received the bid protest, staff reviewed Blois's bid and have determined that actually Blois's bid is not responsive, as Blois have used the wrong pages in the bid form that were replaced in an addendum. And even though the agency did not have to investigate Blois's claims, since their bid is not responsive, staff and legal counsel still reviewed the bid protest letter, and staff still recommends that the board of directors award the construction contract to Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for the amount of $17,526,700, as they do not, as Blois's claims are not valid. Next slide, please. So one of our consultants, Woodard & Curran, has submitted the proposal to perform construction management and inspection services in the amount in front of you, which is about a little bit over $1.175 million. Next slide, please. Also, our consultant, Leon Rowe, who designed the project, have submitted the proposal to perform engineering services during construction for the project in the amount in front of you of $660,000. Both of those amounts are always on a time and materials basis. Next slide, please. So we wanted to go through anticipated project schedule for this project. This evening, April 7th, we're presenting to you the Engineering and Operations Committee. After that, we'll be taking this up to the April 19th board meeting. Please note here that originally this project was actually supposed to go to the May board meeting, but an effort to reduce the amount of due to price volatility for the items that are included in this project, we wanted to increase that and try to eliminate that as much as possible by taking it as soon as possible to the board for their approval. So if the board approves this project and wishes to proceed. We anticipate issuing an NTP to Pacific Hydrotech Corp around May of 2022. We allowed 540 calendar days for construction, so we anticipate completion of this construction around November of 2023. Next slide, please. So with that, staff respectfully request that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt the resolution awarding a construction contract to the lowest bidder, Pacific Hydrotech Corporation, for the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant Wash Water Return on Sludge Systems Project for $17,526,700 and authorize the General Manager to issue a purchase order to Woodard and Kern Incorporated for an amount not to exceed $1,175,000 for construction management and inspection services, and authorize the General Manager to issue a purchase order to Lee & Rowe Incorporated for an amount not to exceed $660,000 for engineering services during construction. So with that, I've completed my presentation, and I would suggest the committee to place this item on the consent calendar if they see it appropriate. And with that, let me hand it over back to you, Chair Cooper. Thank you.
Thank you, Shadi. Are there any members of the public that wish to address this item?
Chairman Cooper, seeing none.
Very good. Thank you. Committee comments. President Martin.
Thank you for your presentation, Shadi. Excellent as usual. I just had a question about the protest and what the attorneys actually responded. Was it classified as a minor irregularity? Was it just a transposition of bid items from one item to another? It looks like it was done by two bidders in the same way. So I'm just curious on what the specific response from the attorneys were. I am assuming that staff recommended that we dismiss the bid protest, but I just like to know a little bit more about it.
Most definitely. I know we have Mike here with us, so I'm going to defer that over to him. But just to prep it for that, we did discuss it with legal, and it was, we can't make the assumption that they made a mistake, right? So that's their number that they put in the bid for us. The bottom line price was the lowest, and everything checks out from them. So, but with that, let me hand it over to Mike, and he probably can have a better answer to that question.
Yep, happy to. Nice to see you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. This is Mike Maurer from Best Best and Krieger. And I did work with Shadi and his team on reviewing this bid and the bid protest. And what the protesters allege is that they believe the low bid interposed two different line items. So line item 8 was on line item 9 and vice versa. In looking at that protest, what they stated was that it is in our bid specs that if we think a contractor is, say, front-loading costs or something like that, the agency has the right to reject the bid. In this case, in looking at it, we don't really feel like that's the case. Ultimately, there would be a schedule of values that would define how the prices are paid out. And this isn't like front-loading to initial mobilization or something like that. So that's something that in the bid specs is discretionary. So we felt like since it's discretionary, the board can also authorize its discretion to accept the bid and move forward. Additionally, I'll note that in general, if there is a discrepancy in a bid, we would have to reject it if it makes the bid materially different. But as Shadi pointed out here, we don't believe the bid is materially different in any way, because ultimately the bid price they gave us is what we're holding them to. So we believe this is a valid bid. And if the low bidder attempted to walk away from the bid, we would enforce their bid bond against it. So we do believe that this is a situation where, to the extent there is any discrepancy, the board could waive it and award to the low bidder.
Very good. Does that answer your question,
Mr.? Yes, thank you. I just one minor follow-up. I just wanted to reconfirm. The low bidder did not change any of his numbers. He simply clarified which bid items they applied to. Is that correct?
That is correct. We really don't need them to clarify which bid items they go to. The key point in your question is that the bidder didn't change any numbers. So ultimately, what we're looking at here is the ultimate bid amount, and there's no reason for that ultimate bid amount to change.
Thank you.
And just to add to that, Mike and the committee, Pacific Hydrotech did not want to pull their bid out. That means everything is good from their side. So just want to clarify that as well. So we still believe that they do have the best, lowest responsible bidder. So and that's why we came to you this evening with this recommendation. But just wanted to also highlight Mike at this, Mike Maurer. He's been really working with us over the years, and I truly appreciate his knowledge in these matters. So just wanted to point that out to the committee.
Yes, thank you very much, Mike and Shadi both. Peter, did you have a Director Orzovsky?
Yes, I think President Martin asked my question. My other question is just for the general public. Regarding the construction management services, we're paying for inspection services. Can you just briefly explain why we're not using in-house inspection services for this project?
Sure. Currently, our staff, we do have limited staff on inspection. And as you can imagine, they're pretty busy right now with work around the city. We do have a lot of projects in construction. This type of work is truly specialized as well. Even though we have the capability in-house and we do have some really competent inspectors, but at this point in time where we're just slammed with work, we do have a lot of projects in construction, and we truly need that extra help, that staff augmentation, if you will, with the consultants that we have. A couple of years ago when we went out and we asked for consultants to be added to our list, we did get a lot of good companies that joined us. And we feel that they can do this work and can do it well and build it to our specs and better even. So, and that's the reason why, we try as much as possible to use in-house. But in this case, with 540 days and such a large magnitude of work, we truly needed that full-time inspection. And sometimes we might even need two or three inspectors at a time, especially as you imagine, if you looked at the big map that we had, there's going to be a lot of work happening at the same time. So, and that's truly why we went out and got that consultant. But we try as much as possible to use in-house. There's a benefit, both experience on us, for our staff, and also, there's cost savings. But in this case, we did need that extra help. I hope that answers your question.
I'd like to clarify a little further too, if I can. Yeah, the type of work that this is, when you're doing the concrete work and some of the other items, we are always going to have to use a consultant for the specialty inspection that's required. There's testing on that concrete. There's testing on the steel that goes into the rebar. So even if we were to use our in-house inspectors, there's always going to be a specialty inspector that we have to consult with. You can get some cost savings from doing that, but in over a 540-day project, you really want to maintain continuity on that project, maintain the same inspector inspecting the same facilities that is very familiar with the plans. And with our staff, it would be not feasible for us to stick one person on that project for that period of time. It's one of the reasons we are able to use consultants. It allows us to balance these peaks in the projects. And then they also are able to bring a whole breadth of experience and knowledge to that project. Just by the nature of having that consulting business specifically designed to inspect this type of work.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for that explanation. Just wanted to be on the record. I have no problem moving this on the consent calendar on my end. Back to you,
Director Planbacker.
Yeah, I had a couple questions, and I would like to have it not be on the consent calendar because it's just so much money. I think people need to know when not just have a consent for $17 million. But my question was, Shadi, about in the staff report that says we cannot consistently reduce turbidity to less than the 2 MTU. So how often are we missing that?
That truly depends. I can invite Rafael to answer that question better than me, but it really depends. It's in case we get a large storm. That really messes with turbidity. I'm sure Chair Cooper had a lot of experience with that at the plants where he managed. But that's usually when it happens in case of there's a fire and you get the storm right after. And it really that messes with our turbidity at the plant. But Rafael, maybe you can add a little bit more to that if you don't mind.
Good evening, committee members and Mrs. Plenbeck. As Shadi mentioned, anytime we have excessive turbidities coming into the plant, it becomes critical. But I would like to add that with the wash water return and limited capability, we tend to exceed the goal of 2 NTU, probably more like 70% of the time. The small basins get stirred up quickly at higher flows. And so anytime we're above 30 MGD or so, which is typical of a summertime flows, we have excess turbidities. While turbidity in it by itself is not, on the wash water return is not a, it's not a requirement, it's a goal. It is an indicator of the water quality. And so it can act to hide pathogens. And so it's in our best interest to reduce it to below 2.
And it said that you were taking care of this in another way prior to this.
So we've limited the capacity. You know, the plant is rated at 56 MGD. We generally try to run it at lower capacity so we can limit the amount of washes and the amount of waste water that goes into the basins. We've also increased the polymer that we add to it to reduce it. And we've also increased the maintenance on the basins. All this has helped, but it's still we're still exceeding it on a regular basis.
Okay, just seems like a lot of money. So I thought I should ask questions.
And the long-term director, it does going to help out with cost savings. And just like Rafael mentioned, you know, right now we do not run it at full max capacity. So that really buys you a lot of flexibility when you can actually run your plant at 56 MGD. But now I believe, Rafael, we run around 28 MGD. So with this extra capacity, you'll be able to actually fully utilize your plant to the maximum capacity and reduce down costs for polymers and everything else. So it's going to run smoother, and anytime you deal with treatment plants, smoother and consistent is always key. And I believe, I'm sure our operators will appreciate this project moving forward as they did the CT basin prior to this. So I'm sure, you know, it's going to pay dividends in the future.
Director Ford, any questions?
Thank you. Just a quick one. I appreciate staff explaining the protests and walking us through it. I would be supportive of that. As always, a minor change, I would think, maybe on the CEQA language, just to make the language in the report consistent with the language in the RESO, note that it was determined to be exempt back in 2017. And so that those exemptions that we're using apply now as well, too. So they just say that the NOE was filed back in 2017 in the body of the report. I'd appreciate it. And that's all. Thank you. Good job, staff.
Thank you, Director Ford. Director Plenbeck?
I forgot to. I was interested that Law, or I don't know if that's how you say it, who does work for us regularly, still had problems with the form. I mean, not that you had to go through and disqualify them, but that they still, I'm worried that our form, people aren't understanding the forms. And I really appreciate that this time we were able to go with the low bidder, but I wish we could have gone with the low bidders prior to this. So again, I'm worried about some confusion with our forms. That was all I wanted to say.
And to clarify that point, it was actually an addendum that they didn't follow through with. So it was noticed and provided to them, and Blois did not follow through with that addendum, and that's what disqualified, although we did not have to evaluate their bid. That is ultimately what disqualified them. So everyone had that addendum. All of the other bidders did use that form, but Blois missed that addendum.
Very good. You know, this is, and I appreciate, Rafael, the explanations. This has been an important project that plant has needed for a long time. The two NTUs is not water that's leaving the plant. It's water that's coming from the wash water, and it returns back to the head of the plant and then is refiltered. But it becomes a vicious cycle. Is if that gets too high, it makes your filters clog faster, so you backwash more, which means you get more wastewater, which means that NTU coming back to the plant gets higher and higher. So this additional capacity will really be helpful, and I'm sure the operators will appreciate that. That's a good project. So if we can move this on to the board. This is a large dollar amount, and so maybe just a brief explanation at the board. I don't know that we need to go into all of the bidding, but you selected the most responsive, the lowest responsive bidder, and do it with that. Does that sound all right to the?
Yeah, and it's also it's helpful, I think, for people to understand the we've all walked through that project. That was the one we went on a tour of a year ago or so, right? Oh no, it was
a lot
before.
Longer than that.
It was 2 years ago. It was before. Anyway, I just think people would appreciate being walked through it. Other board members.
You know what might be helpful is to do just in your PowerPoint is to do a little flow chart of where the wash water goes, how it's treated, how it comes back to the head of the plant, and then how that cycle becomes very difficult the more you're treating and the dirtier the water is. So with that, we'll move it on to the board and just a short presentation at the board. Nothing bad.
Okay, agreed.
Would that be okay, Courtney?
That works. Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item three. Item three is recommend adopting a resolution authorizing the general manager to apply for grant funding under the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Title, blah, 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 Act, Water Reclamation Reuse Projects for the Recycled Water Expansion Project. And Mr. Mayo, I think Shoddy is doing this one as well.
He is. We will pass it over to Shoddy to do another presentation for us today.
Yep. Well, good evening again. This is Shad Bader, senior engineer. Staff has always have looked for grant opportunities to offset construction costs, especially since they've been coming in pretty high. And this one right here in front of us is a great opportunity to set us up for federal grant funds for the Phase 2C project. Usually, almost all the time, a board action is required as part of the application. And this evening, so we would like to request your recommendation to the board of directors to authorize a grant application for the South End Recycled Water Main Extension Project under the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Title 16, WIN Act Water Reclamation and Reuse Project. So we're currently under the completing final design and securing all needed permits for this project. And we anticipate going to bidding sometimes this fall. So with that, Liz, if you can please bring up the presentation, I will get right into it. Next slide, please. So here's a location map for the full project. This extension will tie into the existing recycled water pipeline in the old road and Valencia Boulevard and will extend the recycled water to the agency's southern service area. This is the largest project in the recycled water Phase 2 expansion. Next slide, please. So this phase, like I mentioned, it connects to the Phase 1 pipe that's existing right now at the old Jordan Valencia Boulevard. It's approximately about 28,000 feet of new recycled water pipelines. And we will be receiving a $3 million IRWIM construction grant for this project. Potential users are College of the Canyons, CalArts, New Hope Park, Valencia Meadows Park, Hart High School, Vista Valencia Golf Course, and Henry Mayo Hospital, along with other HOA and medians. The current construction costs are estimated around $24 million for this project. Next slide, please. So we want to give some facts about the grant. The Bureau of Reclamation's grant has a 75% matching funds requirement. We are applying for a little bit over $6 million in grant funding. which represents 25% of the total cost, estimated cost. Applications were due on or before March 2022. Projects work must be completed by January 2025. And upon Bureau of Reclamation's award, the GM will execute funding agreement. So we already sent out the incomplete package pending the board resolution. And if the board approves, then we will send the resolution to our contact over the Bureau of Reclamation and complete the submittal. Next slide, please. So with that, staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt a resolution authorizing the General Manager to apply for grant under the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Title 16 Wind Act Water Reclamation and Reuse Projects for the Recycled Water Expansion Project and execute the grant agreement of Bureau of Reclamation's award the grant and submit the required documents, invoices, and reports required to obtain the grant funding. And I would ask to place this item on consent calendar if you see appropriate. And now back to you, Chair Cooper.
Thank you, Shadi. With that, we'll go to public comment. Are there any members of the public that wish to address this?
Seeing none, Chairman Cooper.
Very good, thank you. And we'll open it up to the committee for comments. We'll just start around this end again. Director or President Martin.
Shadi, real quick question. Thank you for your presentation. At the end of the staff report, we talk about the resolution. There's a placeholder in the draft application, or the application has been submitted because it was due on March 15th. Is that correct?
Yes. So
we're not having the placeholder is not any problem. Is that correct?
No, that's no problem. Did mention that this is not approved yet by the board.
No, we're not considered as being late on our application.
No, that would not be considered late. We did, give them a copy of a similar, the unapproved board resolution, and they said it's fine just to submit the board approved once approved, of course.
Okay, so as soon as we execute the resolution at that board level, then we can just go ahead and insert that.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Thank you, Shadi.
Director Orzechowski.
For these grants, do we request letters of support from Congressman Garcia's office, by any chance? Grants in general, federal grants.
Sometimes we do, it really depends on the amount of grant and the magnitude. But most of the time we do not attach those kind of letters, but we've done that in the past, but it really depends on the grant.
Okay, understood. And then the completion date of January 2025, engineering team is confident in meeting that date?
Yes, that's correct. And the reason for that date is we did receive a $3 million IRWIM grant. So that was a deadline that was identified for the IRWIM. But I see that Cheryl Fowler has her hands up. Maybe we can give her a chance afterwards. But that's the reason why we need to finish by the January 2025. It's just to keep compliant also with the IRWIM grant that we were receiving. So this will be a second grant to the Phase 2C. So it's really good that we're applying for all these grants, and we'll try to secure as much cash as we can to build these. As you can imagine, these are not cheap anymore. So every little bit penny helps in these type of projects. So Liz, maybe we can give Cheryl a chance to add in a couple of things, maybe.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, Cheryl, we can.
Okay. I just wanted to respond to Director Orzechowski's question. We do have letters of support from, I believe on this one, the city and the GSP. And then our federal legislative advocate also requested additional letters of recommendation from our federal representatives. So yes, that does happen as often as possible. So we get extra support from our legislators.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Fowler. That's it for me.
Director Planbeck.
Yeah, I just had one question. Of course, this is wonderful. We need to recycle water and be wonderful if the feds gave us the money for it. However, I noticed it crosses the five and that we had to move the pipe that goes to the Honor Rancho because they're expanding the freeway. Are we going to have a problem here with this pipe that goes under the five when they expand it? They're adding that SUV or HOV lane.
No, not at this bridge. We're crossing on the Valencia Bridge. So there is a spot that we're negotiating right now, getting permits from Caltrans to secure that spot for us. We actually started talks with Caltrans back in probably around 2016, 2017 to discuss that project, that particular project. So they knew about it and they kind of reserved it for us for the recycled water pipe. So the spot is there and we're going to utilize it for sure.
Okay. You're way ahead of everybody. Great.
Director Ford.
Thank you. No, I just want to say good job, staff, on going after the grant money. And I would agree that I think this item could be on consent to the board. So thank you.
Except when we get the grant, then we have to have it.
How does consent sound to everybody? It's a large number. It's a project we've been doing for a long time, but it is a large number. And it's one that I think down the road would make for some very good press in the paper of what it's going to do, what it's going to cost, and where's this water going to go. So hopefully we can do that. Consent sounds all right to everybody?
Consent sounds great.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And thank you, Shadi and Cheryl.
Can we ask them what they think of this new system? Do they like it? Did it work for them?
We can ask them that. Shadi and Cheryl and Raphael.
What do you think?
What do you think of this new system of being able to call into the meeting and do your presentation?
Me personally, I like it. I mean, it does a good job. I don't hear any echo, and I can hear you fine, and I hope you can hear me fine. It's flexibility is always good. Now, I truly appreciate being able to do it from come from my home. So I truly appreciate that. But it works perfect. So I'm really happy with it. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you. Maybe we'll do it the other way around. Is you guys can all stay here in the office, and we'll do it from home, and you can.
Sure. No, I wouldn't mind doing that. Usually, I do it in the office. Because it's less noise from home. But no, this works great, and that's the beauty of having computers and be able to do that hybrid. So I truly appreciate the opportunity.
But I think
hopefully we'll see you again. At one point, we'll definitely meet with the committee again. I miss that interaction as well.
Very good.
And I am actually on vacation. But this was important to me, so it's nice to be able to call in and find out what's going on and to offer any assistance. So I think it's a great system.
Very good, Cheryl. I hope you're enjoying yourself.
I am. Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to item 5. This is to recommend approval of a change order for the Fairway Water Storage Tank Coating Project. Mr. Mayo.
This is an operations project. So we'll hand this one right over to Mike.
Yes, thank you. Chair Cooper, thank you very much. Committee members, it's wonderful to see you all in person once again. Chair Cooper, have you ever thought about teaching in the water systems program at COC? That explanation of the treatment plant process was very good.
Well, as a matter of fact, I used to teach the classes at COC.
Oh, did you really?
I did for a number of years before Steve McLean.
Wow, because I know Bill Pexy did.
I did it before Bill Pexy. Wow. I got Bill involved. And
do you want to go back? We're always looking.
just out of curiosity, is anybody teaching the classes now?
Yeah, the treatment class, I don't know who's doing it. I know it was Lena Boulios. I don't know if you know who she is. She's a consultant. But I'm still teaching. I'm trying to retire from that teaching process, but they keep pulling me back in. Ryan Bayer, our water quality supervisor, teaches there. Chris Perez teaches there. Ernesto Velasquez, who's in our water resources. Yeah, so we're...
And Orlando Moreno teaches the math class.
That's right. He just started. Yeah.
I did the math class and the water treatment classes. And yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it when I did.
Yeah, yeah. I do still get pleasure out of it because, you know, you're helping people get into an industry that you care about, which is, it's nice.
And it's really fun when you see it click and people actually get it. Absolutely. I enjoyed that part of it.
Absolutely.
Well, we, as an agency, we used to provide some funding for the college to help keep the programs going because it's the better our industry, and Metropolitan Water District did as well. So if it gets down to that point, I'd like to see us make sure we don't lose those programs because it's a good program.
Yeah, the current department chair, Regina Blasberg, is doing a tremendous job. I mean, I've had some of the more full classes I've ever had since I've been teaching there. And I've been teaching there since 2020. I'm sorry, 2000. I've been teaching there for 22 years. Yes.
Pretty good. You started very young.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. So if you recall, if you want to pull up the slideshow, Liz, that would be great. We brought this project to the committee last, I think it was December. Next slide. And so the presentation you're going to see is sort of a refresh from then, just to remind you what the project's about. And then I'll explain what the change order, why it's needed. So as you know, we do our dive inspections every 3 to 5 years. Sometimes we drain the tanks and inspect them, but generally we do dive inspections because you can't always take a potable water tank out of service, especially if there's only one tank in that zone. And so we do rely on those dive inspections. The fairway tank was constructed in 99, and it's the original coating. And coatings typically last anywhere from 20 to 30 years. It just really depends. Generally, the area that you see the most corrosion is in the empty space. Because it's a dark space, it tends to get warmer, and it's moist, right? You get some of that condensation that builds up. And so that's usually where you see some of the corrosion. And we also have a coatings firm that we work with that helps us, does some of the dive inspections, and then writes the specifications for the coating before we go out to bid. And so in December, the board of directors approved the RECO project for $319,000. Next slide, please. So there was a first change order, but it was within staff's authorization amount, and it was to replace the vent. So I don't know if all of you are familiar with it, but on top there's a vent structure that allows the air to come in and out of the tank. And while the initial inspections before the project was awarded, we did inspect and we saw some corrosion. You couldn't see really the deterioration until it was taken out of service and drained. That's when you saw from the inside the light kind of shining through. And so that first change order was to replace that vent. The second change order that we're asking authorization, the committee's recommendation and the board to authorize, is to do some additional repairs that were not seen during the dive. I'll explain it and then I'll go, the next slide will show you the pictures. There's a certain areas within the top area that you cannot see when you do a dive inspection. You can kind of get an idea if there's twisted rafters pretty easily. You can generally get an idea if rafters separate from the outside edge, but in the center support column, you can't really see it because sometimes there's a cone structure. So next slide, please. So if you can see that far left picture, that's that cone structure. So if you imagine the water being in the tank, you generally have 3 to 4 feet of space. And so the person who's diving it can't see up above that cone structure. So the picture on the upper right shows there's 6 rafters that have actually separated. And so that's what's needing to be re-welded and reattached. You can also see in the center one in the middle, the daylight that's appearing from the vent. That's the vent structure right there in the middle. And you can also see in that picture, and then the one on the right, the pitting that was also not visible during the dive inspection. And so the contractor, we actually negotiated. I didn't. Gil Hermosillo, who's on the call, If there's any questions, he and our other water systems supervisor, Adam Pontius, as well as our coatings inspector, negotiated with the contractor, and they feel that it's reasonable that the amount of $50,000 to do these repairs is adequate. Next slide, please. So we have in our current budget $455,000, so we'll have an excess of around $76,000, even with these two change orders. The amount, the total amount will bring it to about $387,000. So we do have the funds already budgeted and approved. We just need authorization for this change order. Next slide, please. So the recommendation is that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute change order number 2 to the contract with Associated Tank Constructors, Inc. to increase the construction contract amount by $50,000 to $378,250 for the Fairway Water Storage Tank Coating Project. And we are also hoping that it can go on consent. And with that, I would answer any questions.
Members of the public that wish to address this
one. Seeing none, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. A quick one, Mike. Does this repair go on in place? There doesn't have to be any disassembly to pull the beams out and then solder, or does it all go on?
Correct. It's in place.
In place.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wondered why the beams would have separated. Was this tank in the earthquake or something? I think it was built afterwards.
Well, it was 99, so it definitely wasn't in the Northridge earthquake. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why
it would detach. Like a slide? I mean, it just seems odd that it would. I mean, that seems worrisome that they would be separated.
Yeah, I mean, maybe an engineer might have a insight as to why it possibly could have detached.
Corrosion.
Yeah, that's what
just,
I think.
Just general corrosion will eventually wear down the welds first
and separate it.
And yeah. Separate it out. But as long as you have most of the beam in contact, it really isn't a it's not really a structural issue until the whole beam separates all the way down, in which case it would start to twist or turn like we've seen on other tanks.
Director Orzechowski.
Mr. Oliver, are we documenting these findings for future inspections so that you and your team can kind of anticipate what to look for in other tanks?
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked with our coatings inspector, and he said there's always going to be some times you're just not going to be able to see everything. But we are making note of specific items that we're learning along the way to see what we can do to inspect it a little more thoroughly.
And are those notes readily available for inspectors and your team?
Yes. Yeah. Both our water systems supervisors keep that information.
Okay. Thank you.
President Martin.
thank you, Mike, for the presentation. So to clarify, if adequate access was provided, this would have been in the original bid. Is that correct? Is that your opinion?
Yes.
So it wouldn't be a change order.
Correct.
That's all. Thank you.
You know, water tanks that we had when I was working, had the same problems. You know, you have the sheet plate on the top that rubs on the beams all the time. And when you go in to inspect one, you'll have beams that have fallen down and are not holding up anymore. And we changed our construction of tanks to put the beams on the outside of the tank. Is if you drive along Balboa Boulevard, there's two tanks at the Jensen treatment plant, you'll see there, one of them has you put a big support ring on the upper edge of the tank and then ran the beams on the top and supported the roof up to the beams rather than having the beams on the inside because the chlorine in the upper areas of the tank is very corrosive. And so much more expensive, but the price that you've got here is very reasonable from what I've seen. With that, shall we move this on to the consent calendar?
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Item 6, recommending approval of replacement of 5,000 meters as part of the AMI meter replacement program. And I think this is probably Mr. Elworth.
Yep, it's back to me again. And this is another sort of refresh. If you remember back in November, I came to the committee and then we went to the board to request the purchase of around 5,000 meters. I think it was about $1.5 million. The purpose for that order back then is because of the long lead time. And I'm happy to report today we receive 4,400 of our 3/4-inch meters. We're still waiting for the 1-inch, 1.5-inch, and 2-inch meters, but they told us they will be in within the next month. So we'll be ready to start, hopefully, if this goes as planned in July. And so it'll be a little bit of a refresher presentation, but I thought it would be appropriate just to kind of bring you back up to speed of what we talked about last November. So if you could bring up the presentation, please, Liz. Next slide. So I think you all are aware, and we discussed this in November, we read meters three ways, manually by walking, automated meter reading by driving by with a laptop inside, and then AMI, which is the automated metering infrastructure, which is what we're moving towards with this project, as well as we already have quite a few in the ground. And I'll talk about that in a minute. In addition to the replacement of the meter requires some infrastructure, towers, antennas, base stations, repeaters, things of that nature, to allow the communication to happen throughout the valley. Next slide, please. So at the time that I did this presentation, we still have around 4,969, so just under 5,000 manually read meters. And that's the what we're asking for on this one for the meter replacement for the contractor to do the work. Now it says approximately 11,000 AMI meters. I found out today from our customer care department, because I was at Rockefeller all week, we're upwards of 20,000 already. So we're fastly approaching a third of our system being read AMI, which the staff is really happy about because it allows them now to do more maintenance work that's needed, as opposed to either driving or walking around collecting meter reads. We still have about 56,000. Well, I guess now it'll be 46,000 AMR, which is the drive-by. So that's even better than the walking, but still our focus is to go all the way to AMI. Next slide, please. So I had this same slide, you know, the picture of the snow, obviously that's not our area, but I thought it was appropriate to put in because some people do deal with tough elements. Today was 95 degrees. So if you're walking a route, it's hot. And we routinely hit above 100 in the summertime. We don't have to deal with snow, but we have other weather conditions. The truck just symbolizes that we do drive by. The lower meter shows the transponder connected to the meter. The middle picture shows the infrastructure that we use in the vehicles that allows us to do our drive by. And then the two right pictures, one on top shows the antenna and the other one shows a base station. Next slide, please. So we routinely change our meters. We need to look at our meters and we do as an asset. They're a very important asset. They're a small asset, but if the meter doesn't read correctly and measure the amount of water going through it, that affects the revenue coming in and we're not adequately collecting enough revenue that we're selling for the water. We base it on age, warranty, failure. Meters tend to fail at times as they get older. And they also tend to under-register as they get older. And in general, our crews replace approximately 3,700 meters a year as part of our changeout program, which is around 5%. Next slide, please. So this AMI migration plan was coupled with a grant that we applied for. I think my next slide, no, it's this slide I'll talk about. So it's really unfortunate. We haven't heard yet from the Bureau of Reclamation. We were supposed to hear in January. It's a $2 million grant. Then they said February. I talked to Cheryl Fowler a few weeks ago. She said they told us sometime in spring of this year. So I guess we got to wait until potentially June 20th. We think we have a really good shot of getting this grant, but we still don't know that yet.
But as part of it, it's a three-year grant that would start in July, and we would change out approximately 20,000 meters. 10,000 of those would be part of the grant funding. And then the rest of those would be our routine replacements that we do around 3,700 a year. And that just identifies the areas that we had targeted. That 4969 will take care of all the manual reads. So if the committee recommends and the board approves, we will at the probably around September timeframe have no more manually read meters, which would be great. Next slide, please. So in November, the Engineering Operations Committee and subsequently the Board of Directors authorized that purchase of 5,000 meters I already talked about. And again, when I created this, I said expect it to be received in April, and we got 4,400 of them today. So that's good news. I guess I did have a slide talking about the grant. Next slide, please. It's the replacement program is not contingent upon the grant. We have budgeted this year, and it's in next year's approved budget to continue with these. The grant will just help offset some of the costs, obviously, and then it would expedite the changeout process because we would bring in a contractor to help us change out some of these meters around 10,000, as opposed to just relying on staff doing around 3,700 a year. Next slide, please. So we put out the RFP. It was publicly bid through Planet Bids in February of this year. We received two bids on March 2nd of this year. Golden Meter Service bid amount was just over $454,000, and Concord Utility Service was just over $607,000. Our internal estimate was around $425,000. And how we came up with that estimate was approximately the length of time to replace a meter. So a 3/4-inch meter roughly is 15 to a half hour. 1 inch to 2 inch, anywhere from a half hour to 1 hour. It just really depends on the condition of the meter. Is the meter buried? Is the meter angle stop frozen? Does it require additional work besides just uncoupling it, removing it, putting a new meter in? And based on that and based on our labor rates, that's where we came up to $425,000. We also included some overhead for that. Staff reviewed the bids and recommends awarding the contract to Golden Meter Service as the lowest responsible bid. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, these funds are already approved in this two-year capital improvement budget for meter replacements. Next slide, please. So the recommendation is that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to enter into a contract with Golden Meter Service Inc. in the amount not to exceed $455,000 to replace approximately 5,000 meters as part of the AMI meter replacement program. I would also like to acknowledge Teresa Watley, who's our administrative assistant for this department, and Gino Garcia, who's our supervisor for this department. Teresa completed her first RFP. This was, you know, with the help of the engineering staff. Gino did a ton of work with his staff on walking these routes, identifying the areas, sort of pre-planning to help the contractor when they come on board to help this transition and this replacement process go smoothly. So with that, I would entertain any questions.
Seeing none, Chairman Cooper.
Very good. And we'll start back over here. President Martin.
Sure. I just want to thank Mike and staff for moving forward with this. And thank you for constantly looking for grant funding to offset the costs. And it's always appreciated that we can get some external funding coming in to offset our costs. And I've certainly supported them. And I think your operations estimate is pretty darn close. So. With that, I would support moving it forward to consent.
Same here. Great presentation. Thank you for the delivery. Just a couple of questions. So we're looking at $91 per one AMI meter. Great. I think I've asked you this before, Mr. Allward. What is the service life of an AMI meter?
So the meter itself, it depends. If it's a ultrasonic meter, technically the meter part will last forever, but the battery is warranted for 10 years and prorated to 20. And then if it's a mechanical meter, multi-jetter or that, generally they last anywhere from 10 to 15 years.
Okay, and what are plans with our used AMR meters and manual meters?
So what we're doing is we're replacing the meters that are have reached their useful service life. But we do recycle the brass bodies through our location that we have. We have a brass bin that we put them in, and then we have someone come in and take those.
Okay. And will the AMR vehicles be repurposed for other purposes?
Yeah, they currently are. I think we only have maybe one or two dedicated meter reading vehicles. Generally, the staff use their work trucks that have all their tools and equipment to do whatever maintenance work they're doing as well. But yes, we would repurpose those.
Okay, and just final question about staffing. Our field services sub-department, you know, they're not being let go. Is that correct?
Correct. There's okay. Plenty of maintenance that needs to be done.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Back to you, Chair Cooper.
Thank you.
Director Plambeck.
Yeah, I just wanted to know is if you buy all these meters, because we bought a slew of meters to get a good price on them, right? Is that going to affect the grant? I mean, because sometimes when you...
No, so that great question, Director Plambeck. And I doubt Cheryl Fowler is still on because she's on vacation.
Yeah, we shouldn't have her.
But I would thank her because she is the one that's after all these grants. She is the master grant person. But no, we specifically asked the Bureau if we could make a purchase ahead of time. And they said, yes, you just can't start the installation before July 1 if you're awarded the grant.
Okay. Very good. Director Ford?
No questions, just a good presentation. And I would say, yes, a good consent item. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And I like the idea of seeing us use a contractor to do this, and it kind of speeds the process up. And because it's a very long process to put all these, change all these meters out. So that's excellent. And with that, we'll move it on to the board and consent. Thank you, Mr. Albert. Item seven, Mr. Mayo and Mr. Alvord on capital improvement projects.
Thank you very much, Chair Cooper. This is our update to our capital improvement project budget. We last year approved a two-year budget, so this is the update of the second year of that budget. We didn't meet all of our goals, didn't get all of our projects done. Some of those had some delays in them, mainly due to either COVID or delays in material costs, but we are moving pretty aggressively on a lot of our projects right now, as you'll see when we come up to them. So some of those projects got rolled over, but we are still very close to the original CIP budget that we had proposed the 2 years ago. So I'm going to walk you through those. Inside your packet, you have the full budget. In the presentation that we're going to show today, we're only showing you the projects that are over $1 million. We're going to kind of walk through those projects, give you some examples of the ones we're working on, and talk a little bit about some of the challenges we've had. Next slide, please, Liz. So this is a summary of our PAYGO budget, $74 million, very big amount of money. What we had previously was approximately $56 million per year, and about $18 million of that did not get used last year, and we're rolling it over into this year. You can see that our revenue, our standard PAYGO, is about $18 million a year. And then we are using some funds, some reserves, and some carryover from the prior year. And then our connection fees that we are estimating coming up. And we've been pretty accurate with our connection fees. This past year, we are actually about $1 million over our estimate in the budget from the prior year. Well, I say we are still projected to be about a million because we aren't done with this fiscal year and we're still collecting new capacity fees every day. Next slide, please.
So as you can see on here, we've already approved some of the projects. We just recently, yesterday, or Tuesday at the board, approved the Saugus 3 and 4 replacement wells. And the Santa Clara Hanby wells have gone out to an RFP. And we are anticipating about the end of next month, getting those RFP, getting those bids back, and then coming to the board with that project. So by the time we start the next fiscal year, we're going to be well on our way in the large cost construction projects of at least $20 million in those two projects alone that we anticipate spending. So a lot of times the design is not the larger cost, the construction is, and it's taken us a little bit of time to get to construction. You heard on Tuesday some of the challenges we were having with Saugus 3 and 4, getting that to construction. But I'm happy to say with the approval of the board, we are going to move forward on that project now. We're already issuing that notice to proceed. Next slide, please, Liz. So just to recap, this is our Saugus 3 and 4 wells. We showed this before. We're going to be getting about 2,000 gallons per minute out of each of these wells, hopefully. And we are anticipating spending about $14 million of that budget in the next fiscal year. There will be some money spent this fiscal year because the notice to proceed will occur and the contractor will begin mobilization. And then this project is more than a year, so it will actually carry into the next fiscal year as well. Next slide, please, Liz. There are a lot of groundwater treatment projects that we're looking at right now. The Santa Clara Hanby that I just talked about, it's just a larger one coming up, but we also have the starting of the design on the E-wells, as well as wells T7, U4, U6, S1, and S2. So the charges you see there are planning and design, and we will be coming to the board when those are ready for a construction level approval in the next fiscal year. Obviously, groundwater treatment is a focus, or has been a focus for the agency for a while now, trying to recover the water supplies we have locally to offset our imported supplies. Next slide, please. We also have some Dean Zone improvements. These are identified in a 2013 master plan as a deficient area. And then you also have new development coming in, both the Sand Canyon Plaza and the Skyline Ranch subdivision. So we're utilizing those developers to add some cost savings to our ratepayers, having them not only build the storage that they need for their system, but also building the additional storage that we need. So there will be a fair share cost sharing between the developer and the agency. The developer contributes the land. The developer conducts the environmental review, which we do not share in that cost. And the you get an overall economy of scale in cost savings by the developer building a larger project and getting better and more competitive bids. So all in all, it's a very good system for our ratepayers to be able to utilize this project. And instead of having that developer build a tank only suitable for them, they are able to use that system to serve the existing residents in that area as well. We will be coming forward. We've already come forward with the Dean tanks. Those are in design right now. Once those are ready for construction and we have the final numbers on that, we'll come back to the board with those numbers. The numbers you see listed in this budget are just our participation amount, and it's for the Skyline Ranch area. That's about 60% roughly of the total project. The developer only needs about 40% of that tank, and Sand Canyon Plaza, it's about our contribution is about 70%, and then the Sand Canyon Plaza needs about 30% of that tank. And so you'll see those numbers come back as soon as we have a little bit better design, which we are currently working on both of those designs. Next slide, please, Liz. We've done some horse trading between operations and engineering. The idea is that you have quite a few pipeline replacement projects that we've been utilizing. There are a lot of other tasks that operations has been asked to maintain in the system, and the system is needing that maintenance. They've had a number of leaks that they're having to maintain as well. So it makes sense that for pipeline replacement, that those type of projects can also sit within engineering. We can do the evaluation with operations, determine the most critical path or which
which pipelines need to be replaced most urgently. And then we would take on the design of that pipeline and move forward using engineers and then ultimately go to bid and use contractors and inspectors. Whenever possible, we will use internal staff to do the design as well as internal staff to do pipeline inspection. The Valencia marketplace, as an example, we did go to a consultant for design, but we are going to be using some in-house inspection on that project when it goes forward. So there's also opportunities for us to juggle our staff and get a little cost savings using our existing staff on those projects. I think this is a good program for us. I think it is going to be moved forward really well, but we still have some of those pipelines to get done. As you see, the first two, we have some in line ready to go. And then we have a general larger budget that is under pipeline replacement. That has a series of other projects that we're looking at and still prioritizing. So we will bring those each individually before the board as we get ready for their replacement and as we get ready for their design. Next slide, please, Liz. That I'm going to turn it over to operations, Mike.
Thank you very much. So Courtney, thank you to you and your staff for helping operations out. What's interesting is the Dickinson project that was on the previous slide. We're hopeful that we can use that sort of model and use Courtney's internal staff to help. So what we do is we have our utility operations lead who would go out, identify the location, meet with local contractors like surveyors or local engineering firms to help us lay out the project. We then go out and do, not potholing, vacuum excavation to identify the location of the other utilities, shoot topography, create the design drawings, and get it ready to go. So that project is getting ready to go with a lot of operational help. And so we think by utilizing some of Courtney's staff and some of the operations staff, they can do all that work internally. So I'm looking really forward to doing that. So the operations sort of CIP work is the stuff that requires limited engineering. It doesn't require no engineering. It's just limited what's within operational understanding. So, for example, like tank recoats for internal pipeline replacements, things of that nature, meter changeouts and such. Those are more operational centric. And so we're going to take those. But as Courtney mentioned, we did hand off some of the pipeline projects that will be bid out because we just don't have enough staff to replace all the pipeline ourselves. They consist general categories, which I just mentioned. A portion of each budget is held for unforeseen failures. So, for example, you know, we have quite a few pumps. I think there's 170 total pumps in our system, and that doesn't count wells or treated surface water connections. Pumps fail periodically, no matter how much you maintain them, and they can fail immediately without even being expected. And so we need to hold some of those dollars aside for those unforeseen failures. And our projects are based on age, failure rate, criticality, location, and then there's other considerations as well. Next slide, please. So our budget, what we call TDOMs, treatment, distribution, operation, maintenance, and safety. Now, water quality gets a little upset. It's like, where's us? And I said, you're in operations, so don't worry about it. Just TDOM seems to work. The actual amount came down a little bit. That's because we handed off a couple million dollars or so to the engineering group. But some of the other ones did come down slightly from last year's budget. And the reason for that is, you know, our staff really wants to do a lot. And so sometimes they overestimate what they think they can do. And so I'm trying to get reality more in line with what's projected as well. But again, as I said, there's some buffer space for some of these dollars, just in case things happen that we don't foresee. So that $2.1 million for pipeline replacements, that's what we're going to do internally in terms of replacing. The ones that Courtney talked about are the ones that would go out to bid for outside contractors. As you can see, the meter infrastructure replacements, that's for the AMI stuff. Equipment now and vehicles, it's 1.57. This last year was 1.37. And I think we've only spent about 500,000 so far. The main reason, we just haven't received the orders. So I think we have about six vehicles that are on order that we ordered back in October or November. We still haven't received them. And it's because of delays due to COVID and materials and things of that nature, chips and such. I don't know if there's anything else. So the one other one I wanted to point out was laboratory improvements and replacements. So those of you, and I'll say it, legacy CLWA folks, you're well aware that we have our internal lab. For those of you who are not, we do have our internal lab. I'd be more than happy to have Jeff Kay give a tour if anybody's interested. It's an old lab. I think it's over 25 years old. And so it's in need of some facelift, some replacements of some things. And so we have budgeted some money to start doing some planning and designing of how we can improve the lab. You know, we've added one LCMS MS, that's the PFAS machine, last year. There's talks of possibly adding a second because of the number of samples that we're doing, which would also, in essence, save us a lot of money about outsourcing PFAS samples. So we just kind of need to reconfigure some things, reassess what the lab's going to look like. We've talked about how we would keep the lab up and running, and we have several ideas on what we would do if we had to shut certain portions down. We do have a lab at Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant, so we would utilize some of that. But that was another one that I wanted to I think that we upped that amount when we took down some of the other numbers. But other than that, everything is pretty much similar to what it was. And the overall dollar amount was reduced from last year. Next slide, please. So you can see I just highlighted a few of these. I've already talked about this. Some of the key projects we're looking at is a Vasquez Canyon pipeline improvement, Same Lane, Bonita Lane, and Via Princesa Weyerhaeuser, or Weyerhaeuser, I guess you might say it. The original amount was the 4.5 for 2022. And then this fiscal year, we're asking for 2.1, which is a reduction of what is currently approved. Next slide. Nothing has really changed in the meter project area. The two slides you probably remember from last year, those are propagation studies. The red means that the center tower, you can kind of see with that yellow pin, is at the Round Mountain tank. And that those are the areas that that base station and AMI tower can pick up. Excuse me. The yellow is they can pick them up, but not as easily. And then the bluish areas, you can't pick up really at all. Next slide. And then I just wanted to show the equipment. You know, we have a number of vehicles. And if you remember, Jesus Martinez gave a presentation on what we're going to be faced with in terms of replacements going forward. We have a lot of heavy equipment that gets a lot of work. Some of our vehicles are fairly old, more than 10 years, and they have a lot of mileage on them. Not mileage, hours in terms of equipment. We have six backhoes that are very old, going back to the 90s. And so those types of things we're trying to replace. But again, one of the backhoes I think we purchased, I think it was on the 2020 budget. It took us over a year to actually get it. Now that was right in the middle of COVID. And I think it was stuck in the dock at the port at San Pedro. But it's just to give you an idea of what we're faced with in terms of lead times and delays. Next slide. We do well rehabilitation. We're in the middle of rehabilitating Saugus 2. So what we did was we pulled and video surveyed that well. And we're going to be replacing the pumps on that. We're going to rewind the motor. But we also put everything back in so we can operate it because, again, there's going to be long lead times in getting those pumps. So it was out of service for a couple months, but it is back in service now. We're also doing well rehabilitation, but that's usually covered on the engineering side for these PFAS treatment wells. So, for example, the Hanbi well, which is one of our oldest wells, is going to be rehabilitated as part of that project. Well 160 failed. That's the one that's in the Valencia Country Club golf course. We've received an estimate to get those, that pump replaced and the motor redone. Gita Well is one that we're going to propose, which is up off of Bouquet Canyon here. You got Clark, which is near Saugus High School, and then Gita's a little bit further up. We're proposing to do that one next year as well. And so there's quite a few well rehab projects. What's really nice is our staff is certified to operate the crane. So we can pull the alluvial wells. We don't have a large enough crane to pull the Saugus wells, so we do have to outsource that. But for Gita Well, we will do most of that labor work to remove it and then have a contractor come in, video it, rehabilitate it, usually brushing, chemical treatment, and then we would reset everything as well. I think that's it. Back to you, Courtney.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Yeah, all the debt-funded projects are engineering projects moving forward. We do have some debt-funded projects we're still working on. We had some projected bond proceeds or additional bonds, but we haven't obviously pulled the trigger on that, and that will be an issue that we come back to the board at another time to discuss. But we do want to talk about some of the projects that we have upcoming. Next slide, please, Liz. So we have the sludge collection system that we just talked about today. Moving forward, that's our biggest line item, single line item project we have coming up. Other than that, we have also that phase 2C south end backbone, some additional recycled water fill stations moving along, and then the pipeline, Magic Mountain Pipeline, Magic Mountain Reservoirs, and then, of course, the LARC project. So these projects have all been in the works for a while. I know you've heard about each one of these at various times, but they're long lead projects. They take us a long time to prepare. So next slide, please, Liz. So just a quick recap on this one. You saw a lot on it today, so I'm not going to focus too much, but thank you for moving this on to the full board. This will be a very important project for us. Next slide, please, Liz. Still focused on our VOC treatment and groundwater treatment, we have the well 201 that we've been doing some preliminary design and layout and then working with DDW on how we would actually be able to serve that. And I think we have a good layout now and a good preliminary design. So we will be coming back to the board with this project in the near future with a final design. Next slide, please, Liz. It's a lot of recycled water improvements that we are doing right now. The fill station projects we've been working on with DDW and the regional board, and obviously the sanitation district, because we're going to be in those areas. And those projects should be moving forward to design here pretty quickly. And hopefully we can get those implemented quickly as well. We're also looking to expand the recycled water system, which we talked about earlier today, that we're looking for grant funding, which obviously would offset the costs we're listing here. But we are hoping as we move forward, we will continue to look for any additional funding that offsets some of these debt finance. Next slide, please, Liz. The Magic Mountain 6B pipeline is actually nearing completion. And the reservoir, we have some changes up at Five Point recently with some of their staffing. We've been talking to them and letting them know that our priority is for that regional reservoir. And so we will be coming forward to you very soon, hopefully in the next fiscal year, to obtain that property and to begin building the tank on top in the Five Point area for a 5 million gallon reservoir that would serve regional needs and emergency storage for that area. 5.7 million gallon regional reservoir. Next slide, please, Liz. The Castaic Conduit is actually the focus will be the small pipeline that we have to jack and bore underneath the river, the portion highlighted in yellow. It'd be a 54-inch steel pipeline constructed in the new fiscal year. So we're trying to get the portion in the river completed before we come out and do the bid on the rest of the pipeline so that we're ready for it and we're not waiting on either end. And next slide, please, Liz. This is our last slide for tonight. And this is the LARC project, a very good project to help out two under at need facilities or disadvantaged communities that need this pipeline. Some of those communities are currently trucking water in order to serve their residents. So it's a really benefit to be able to get these grants to be move this pipeline up there. Also, we will be able to utilize the zero interest loans that are available from the state to offset some of the other costs that we have going on and some of these other projects we have going on. So this LARC project, not only does it serve those disadvantaged communities, it also helps out our existing customers by giving us a low interest loan that we can, or no interest loan that we can spread out to do a lot of projects. So one of the things I can say on this project is we are very dependent on getting this project in. We're trying to get it done as soon as possible, but even ordering things such as ductile iron pipe, we are being told is 18 to 20 weeks out. So again, although we are doing our best to meet the all of these projects and we're putting in the engineering and getting them designed, the actual construction, when we go to construction, may see delays that may push us into an additional fiscal year. Without the budget approved this year, we can't even get started. So we need the budget approved this year to begin the project and to go to construction, even if that means ordering materials and waiting 4 to 6 months for those materials to arrive. It also, you will notice that we are coming to the board at the committee meetings, and a lot of times we've been pushing projects to the very next board meeting. It's because there's a 90-day window from approval of a contract where the bid, or 90-day window from when we receive a bid till the bid is no longer valid. And in 90 days, the material costs change significantly. So the faster we can let that contractor order their materials, the less likely we are going to see a claim for additional material charges, and we can stay within contract and enforce our contract. So we're trying to move those forward as much as possible and to help out the contractors so they're not seeing undue costs in their job because they're able to order their materials and secure their materials as soon as possible. That's what we have for the presentation. Thank you, Mr. Cooper, or Director Cooper.
Very good. There's a huge amount of work going on. Are there any members of the public that wish to address this?
Chairman Cooper, we do have one public comment.
Very good.
Ms. Noltmeyer, you may begin your public comment. Ms. Noltmeyer, *6 to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. I just have a question. I believe you said something about that you outsource all your PFAS samples. I'm just wondering why that is done. Why is it being outsourced?
Is that the extent of your comments, Ms. Noltmeyer?
That's my question right now, yes.
Okay. Mr. Alvord, if you would.
Yeah, I'd be happy to address that. Yeah, if that's what I said, that's not what I meant to say. We do outsource some. The majority of the PFAS samples are handled all in-house with our recently purchased LCMS-MS. However, if the burden becomes too strong on our lab, we do have to outsource some.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Alvord. With that, we'll open it up to, there are no other public comments. Is that correct, Liz?
Seeing none.
Thank you. We'll open it up to committee comments. Mr. Ford, Director Ford.
Just a quick question for Mike on the acquisition of future equipment. The state has said, hey, we're not going to let you buy fossil fuel powered generators in year 2024. Does that in any way complicate replacing our backup generators, our mobile generators?
It does a little. The replacement is, if I understand it correctly, half of the new purchases starting in 2024 are required to be zero emission. And then 2028, 100% of your replacements have to be purchased. So we don't have to get rid of anything except some of the old backhoes we do because of, I think it's CARB that has certain rules about how much emissions you're allowed to have out. There are going to be some exemptions. I know Jesus Martinez, who's our fleet and warehouse supervisor, is looking into that and working with different groups on that. I know emergency services allows for certain things, because there is some concern if all of our vehicles are electric or zero emission, and our workers have to take them home when they're on call. What do we do? Do we have to have them charge it at home? You know, how does that sort of thing work? So we're still trying to figure all of that out. We do have a little bit of time, but it is almost the middle of 2022 already. But as of now, what Jesus has recommended and we've actually approved to start leasing a couple of vehicles to get an idea. And we're leasing one work truck that would be used for the drive-by meter reading. That's an electric vehicle. The lead time on that is a little over a year. So we don't even think we're going to get it until the middle of next year. My hunch is the state's going to have to pull back a little bit on this, because the cart seems to be a little bit before the horse. The other vehicle that we're going to lease is just a pool car, so that we use, you know, he uses it. He's stationed here, Jesus Ramirez is, but he has staff at each of the Rockefeller, Pine Street, and Golden Triangle locations, because those are the warehouses. So he'll drive there with a vehicle that's a pool car here. So he will use an electric pool car to just kind of get a sense of how it's going to work for us. And then hopefully they do make some exemptions for emergency purposes, because it could create some potential issues.
Okay. Thanks.
Director Plumbeck.
Okay, phew, that was a lot of information. It would be really cool if you guys had a question and answer session in between, because I hope I remember everything I want to ask. One of the things was, well, 160, isn't that half owned by Valencia, whatever, who it are, golf course,
yeah.
And are they paying for half of it?
Yes, that? Yes, okay. They are, yes. Okay. I don't know what they're called, Phoenix something, I think, but I always remember it as Valencia Country Club. But yes, their legal and our legal is working out the arrangements on payment and how much each owes, but yes.
Okay. And for Courtney, the Phase 6 Magic Mountain Pipeline looks like it goes right through the old well pads. You know, that was all, you know, that was an oil field over there. So what are we doing about that? I understand that closing a well is just like putting a bunch of concrete in it. Do we know where all the wells are? And
yeah, we went through, before I got here, they had gone through the maps of all the well locations and maintain a proper separation from those to meet DDW requirements. And those plans all went through DDW review and approval as well. Mm-hmm. To make sure that we were not anywhere near the well fields or well pipelines that were through that area.
Yeah, that's good, because that's something that's been worrying me. And
it's also a welded steel pipeline throughout there, so it's
yeah. But if you're digging, you don't want to dig into a closed well. I mean, that could
correct.
Be a big disaster. And who's doing the construction out there? Is it Newhall or Lennard, Five Point, whoever they are now?
Yeah, it's Five Point. So Newhall Land and Farm is the one who hired the contractor to do that work. We do have our inspector that is out there monitoring, and we have our own consultant who is also reviewing the plans and doing project management. The consultant is Michael Baker.
Okay, and he's well aware of all the stuff you should be looking for out there.
Yes, yes, they are.
Okay, and you know, that's an old field. And when I was exploring that with my other nonprofit hat to make sure there was public safety in there, one of the things that Regional Water said was that they think they've got them all. But so, you know, some of the really old ones may not even have been properly registered. So is there something... Are people aware of that? Are they watching out for things as they go along? And they may not have been abandoned. Everything that they knew about was abandoned properly. But if they didn't know about it because it wasn't on the map, it won't be.
Yeah, and obviously that's a major concern for the developer as well. They would have to mitigate anything that they came in contact with for those prior oil wells. most of that pipeline is in and they haven't encountered anything. The part that is remaining is the part that leads up to the future regional reservoir site off to the side, and there are no nearby wells that are known. And so I don't expect that we will, I should probably knock on something and make sure, but we don't expect anything else. So, yeah, so far it's been very good.
I saw the grading out there and I can't figure out how they know where the wells are, because they're not supposed to be putting housing over the wells either. So
correct. Yeah, they have well maps and they have it all documented. They provided those to us to review as well. We had to look at that in order to do the Saugus 3 and 4 well locations to ensure the proper separation from any prior wells. Went through CalGEMS and DDW to ensure that that was met, those separations were met.
And then I also had some questions about this, the future projects map. This one, it's you have like an extension of Needham Ranch. They're going to turn the...
What page are you on, please?
167. It says Eternal Valley Conversion. Is that, what, are they converting? I mean, I'm just curious. Are they converting the cemetery into something now?
The Eternal Valley had asked for us to get some irrigation water. So we would have potentially a pipeline. We had talked to them about various different scenarios. Ultimately, what we are working with them now is a master metered service that they could have. They would have to pay full capacity fees and have a backflow device. And then that service could in turn be utilized when they are using their irrigation. Right now, they're during the summer, they are deficient on water. They can't keep up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this isn't like they're going to build something in the cemetery area.
No, it's not.
Got you. Okay, so, and Adlin, you have in design phase. Have they, I mean, I know they got approved, but have they moved beyond that? Have you been talking with them about stuff?
We have been talking with them a little bit, but they are just still in the design phase. There are some complications on the projects, getting service from different pressure zones and understanding how exactly we can provide service to that project.
Yeah, so there's some. I didn't see that they were doing anything at all out there. So
no, and they can't move forward. At least from our perspective, they can't move forward with our facilities until we complete this master planning or sub area master plan effort that tells them how they're going to get water, what size pipeline they're going to need, what facilities they're going to need.
Mm-hmm. Well, are they trying to move forward? Because they, I haven't. I mean, I kind of checked their website, the county website, once in a while. I don't see any activity on it. That's why I was asking.
And I'm not positive when the last time they contacted us, they did contact us, but like most development, they come and go and they control their schedule and we try to accommodate.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've heard from them for a few months now.
Okay. And the Wiley Canyon, I know the notice of preparation just came out for the city. So is that going to require water supply assessments? Maybe you know that. I don't know who I should be. You don't know. Courtney.
We will have some study. I don't remember how many units to whether or not you're going to require a water supply assessment for that. Mm-hmm. I would have to check the number of units on that if it still meets that criteria. From a design perspective, we will require them to do a subarea modeling for us. They'll pay for one of our consultants to model their area. We'll get with operations and work out how best to serve them. And then the study will tell us the size pipelines required and the infrastructure they will need to do both on-site and off-site to meet their criteria.
Okay, thanks. That was all.
Very good. Director Orzechowski.
Yeah, thank you for this presentation. Always enjoy cooperations between operations and engineering. I am concerned about those lead times for equipment and materials. For the equipment, for the backhoe, for the trucks, do we have access to readily available rentals, Mr. Alvord?
That's a great question. I know there's a local rental shop that we work with, AV Rental, a lot, and I know that's where we do rent excavators for pipeline projects. We also utilize Quinn, which is just over the hill. We don't have any rental agreements with them, but there are readily available for us to use. We also have cooperative agreement where we participate in what's called CalWARN. gosh, I wish I remember what the acronym stands for. California, I don't know. But it's a cooperative agreement where if you need something, you send out a message to the group throughout the entire state, and they would then provide you whatever services. So for example, it was fairly recent, maybe a few months ago, someone up north was asking for a repair clamp or repair coupling or something. And we actually had one, but by the time I replied to them, somebody else already offered it up. So I don't envision it impeding any of our operations. And I think we have 6 backhoes right now that are fully functional. And with Jesus Martinez, and I can't remember if he brought it up in his presentation, we're utilizing something called Fleetio, which is an application for our staff to do the inspections. So we have them do daily inspections on their vehicles and equipment. And it used to be where they would then tell the warehouse person, and that person would send an email to a supervisor to coordinate repairs and things. Now it's all done within that app. And he's coordinating now all the repairs and maintenance work. And a lot of times those contractors are actually coming on site and he's meeting with them to do that work. So I don't envision it being an issue of lack of availability. It's just meeting any of these regulatory requirements would be the only concern that I might have.
Okay, understood. Could Jesus send me a list of these regulatories, bills, propositions, laws? I'd take a look at them and see if maybe, or Assemblywoman or maybe Senator Scottville can help us out with those.
Yeah, I'll do that.
And Mr. May, I'm concerned about the lead times for materials too. 90 days is a long time, but if that things change really rapidly, could we possibly bring that up to the attention to the board regarding your intentions on trying to get these contracts signed right away and have our vendors be able to secure those materials before they increase in price so drastically?
Yeah, I'll make sure Shoddy highlights that in the presentation he'll be bringing forward to the April 19th board meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Again, great presentation. Always look forward to both of your reports. And again, love the cooperations between operations and engineering. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Thank you, Courtney. And thank you, Mike, for the detailed presentations. Thank you, Mike, for the injection of at least the attempted injection of sanity in your department. And that's not meant to criticize, by the way, because the concern is when you present such an aggressive program, your first question is, do we have the resources to execute all these? These are all projects we've known about. These are high priority projects. We will be moving forward with them. And thank you also for the heads up on warning us that we may get the design done, or there may be some hiccups in the schedule of construction for conditions that we don't have control over. So I understand you're doing the best you can. And lastly, Courtney, you have any comment on whether you've got enough resources to execute on this program if the budget is approved and things aren't delayed as you kind of expect?
I appreciate that. You will see in the next FNA meeting, we are asking for an additional engineer. It was budgeted. It was budgeted with this 2-year budget, and I've been delaying pulling the trigger to see how much work we could accomplish in the current environment and whether or not that additional staff would be necessary. And we have definitely determined, based off of the additional regulations and the additional work that each individual staff is doing on each individual project, we need to make sure we're controlling the number of projects per staff. Currently in our CIP group, we are anywhere from 6 to 10 projects per staff member at any given time, sometimes more than that. From a development side, we have some of our CIP working on developer projects as well, and they could easily go up to 20 projects per staff. So we will be looking for that additional engineer. We do need to pull the trigger on that and hire that engineer. And that will be, fortunately, no impact to the already approved budget because it was already thought of. But we are, as with any staff request, we look at those very, very detailed. I know there's going to be more in that request coming from the F&A committee, and all of us look at those very detailed to make sure that that is going to be necessary and is going to be a long-term position that will continue to be utilized. And I feel that, yes, we will need that additional person to meet these guidelines. With that being said, I'm really hopeful we can hit our target.
Very good. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you, Mike, for sure.
Couple of questions for you, Mike. In your maintenance management system, I mean, you said you have 170 booster station pumps or pumps, not counting the wells. I imagine those are booster stations. And they do fail as well as wells fail. Do we do any vibration analysis monitoring for wells and booster pumps?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson Cooper. Well, and thank you, President Martin, for talking about my sanity. Sometimes I wonder, operations is like a controlled chaos. We do some. We don't do proactive enough. And I was going to mention it in my general report, but since Courtney mentioned additional staff, I'll mention it here as well. We will be also asking the F&A committee for additional staff. There's a lot of undone maintenance work that we need to do. I'm preparing a presentation for the board in June, as well as a tour I think we have coming up. And that it'll be sort of a presentation slash tour. I think I got 20 slides or so. I'm going to try to keep it fairly quick so we can spend most of the time in the field. But it kind of just explains everything that we do. So directly to that, we do some vibration testing. We don't do it on a regular basis. We should. We also do things like infrared testing of our MCC motor control centers. We don't do it as routinely as we should. Fastidious is the word. Sometimes my staff thinks I'm a little too picky, but I definitely set what I think is achievable expectations, because I don't want to set too high of expectations, because when you do that, you just set yourself up for failure. But I do want to set, and I do believe I set very achievable expectations for the staff. We're just not quite there yet.
It can work very well, and it can save a lot of money and time. And in fact, I was always amazed with vibration analysis that it can spot which bearing down the shaft is going bad on you. And it really does monitor quite well. The other one I was going to ask Courtney is, with these long lead times that we're getting for materials, should there be a major earthquake again, which we're always ready for, do we stockpile any pipe, any repair pipe, and should we be ordering any of that few sections of different size pipes to just in case that we need that in an emergency? And if you've got a 6-month lead time, that doesn't help you in an emergency.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pass this one over to Mike. He's the one who controls all the warehouse and the stocking of supplies.
So it's interesting you mentioned that. A local contractor is relocating their facility and they're trying to downsize. And they brought to my attention a couple 27-inch repair couplings. So we do have a 27-inch line, steel line in Valencia Boulevard. Some of you might remember there was a pretty major leak. Gosh, it must have been 15 years ago or so at the intersection there. We do. Do we have enough? That's sort of a loaded question. We do have a lot of repair pipe. We have a lot of repair couplings. I don't know that we have everything. But it's something that staff always pays attention to. And in the middle of an emergency and in an earthquake, we probably won't have enough, but we do have enough that handles the day-to-day leaks. Just to let you know, and this is sort of a precursor to my presentation in June, we are averaging 1.3 leak repairs per actual workday. Now, that's taking out the weekends. It's taking out the dark Fridays. It's taking off the holidays. But on average, we were repairing approximately 1.3 leaks per workday. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for excellent report that provided a lot of information. And you've got a ton of work over the next year, but it goes on long after that. So it's going to be an interesting time. Okay, we'll move on to item 8, monthly operations and production report.
Yeah, the report is in your packet. The only thing I will address is you're all aware because of the meeting a couple days ago, we're bringing well D back online because it is below the running annual average response level for PFOA. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have anything specific about the production or groundwater level reports.
Yeah. Any members of the public?
Seeing none.
Thank you. Any directors on the report? Director Martin, Director Orzovsky? Nothing? Director Ford? Nothing? Director Plumbeck? Very good. And we'll move on to item 9, capital improvement projects construction status report.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. The status report is in your packet. We have had a few instances now where we're change orders are increasing. We will come to you when those are happening and talk to you about them. Nobody likes change orders, and some of them are unavoidable. In these cases, they were definitely unavoidable. So we will be bringing that to your attention. For this list, that's the main projects we're going to be talking about is the Valley Center wells and then the recycled water 2B tank. They don't show up here with the full change order amount because we haven't approved them yet. The change orders will have to go to the board because it'll exceed our authorization. So, and we haven't, for the 2B reservoir, we haven't actually received the change order from the contractor, but we do know that it is coming. So just making you aware, we do our best to control these change orders. I hate taking those dings when we cannot do that, but I will always bring it to your attention.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Mayo?
Seeing none.
Director Orzovsky.
Are those change orders related to materials? Any chance?
The change order for the Valley Center well is due to biomaterial found in the well, so required additional cleaning that wasn't anticipated of the well before we can put it back in service. And the 2B tank site had to do with discovered slide area that was not identified during the initial geotechnical investigation.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Committee planning calendar, item 10.
The planning calendar is in your packet. This planning calendar includes not only the through the next remainder of this fiscal year, but it comes continuation on to next fiscal year. So you can see we have quite a number of projects. We still try to balance it out to keep these meetings at a reasonable time frame. I think we've been doing really well with our balancing of our presentations. I do know that we will be bringing some additional presentations from staff about some of the work we do, and we may bump some of those if the agenda gets too heavy. But our intention is to not only show you the projects, but show you the good work directly from the staff that is doing them.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Mayo outside of the size of type that is in the planning calendar? It's yes, online it does work better.
There's no public comment.
Thank you. Item 11, general report on treatment, distribution, operations, maintenance services section.
Yes, thank you. I already mentioned the other two items, but Keith Abercrombie, our chief operating officer, asked me to mention, I don't know if you guys are familiar with local hazard mitigation plans, LHMPs. So generally cities and counties have them. We have our emergency response plans, things of that nature. But in order to get certain funding, especially FEMA mitigation funding, you have to have one of these LHMPs. And Cheryl Fowler, again, is leading the charge on this. We have put together a team internally with water resources staff. Joe Diaz, our emergency preparedness and safety coordinators on the group. I am. Keith is. We have engineering staff on it. And what it is, we're preparing this, we're using a consultant, Engineering Solutions Services is the consultant. They also do help with grants, is preparing this plan which some of the work we already have. So for example, task five is to conduct a risk assessment. We already did a recent one based on the American Infrastructure Waters Act that was passed in 2018, which was an update to the Bioterrorism Act of 2002. So we've kind of done a lot of this. We know what our most of our risks are, fires, right? Not so much flooding, but they can be. Earthquake, it's our biggest. Drought is also included. So there are a couple things that we did in this risk assessment that weren't necessarily included in the risk and resiliency of the AIWA. We have to create an outreach strategy. So Kathy Martin has also been involved in that. We're almost done. We don't have a plan yet. We've been reviewing chapter by chapter. I think we just finished reviewing chapter 6 and 7. But part of it is to bring that to the board. And so Keith and I believe Steve Cole will be giving a presentation in the coming months on our LHMP for the board to approve it and adopt it, I guess. And then we'll submit it and be able to obtain FEMA mitigation funding. So he just wanted me to bring that to your attention that it will be coming. Let me just read his conclusion here because he went to the trouble of typing up a full page. The plan is being finalized this month. We'll be presenting the plan to the full board in May. Okay, so I guess it's coming next month. The plan will be out for public review comment at the same time. The plan will then be finalized for submission to Cal OES and FEMA. The review process could take several months, probably longer. I added that. Once they've accepted the plan, it will be brought back to the board for final acceptance and approval. So I don't know if there's any questions that you have. I'd be happy to answer any if there are.
Questions from the committee? Director Orzechowski.
Just a quick question regarding the tour. You mentioned it's going to be scheduled sometime in June. Is that right?
I believe so. Either late June or early July, depending on the board meetings and how full they are and such. So I'm not exactly sure. I just got an email from April that we should set it up, and I told her we'd be ready by June or July.
Okay.
I apologize for interrupting, Chairman Cooper. We do have a public comment.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, please go ahead.
Ms. Noltmeyer, you may now begin your public comment.
Cam Noltmeyer here. Yes, this has been a very interesting meeting. I'm glad I sat through it. But I'm just wondering, I hear they are doing amazing planning and for future. And I'm just wondering, when do we reach a point where we're saying we don't have enough water? We are ready, as I have publicly said, we don't drink your water. We don't cook with your water, you know. And I don't know of anyone that does. So we're kind of already doing what we can, and we're providing more water, of course. Because all that water goes back into your system, I guess. But just when, with all this planning and demands, does there come a point where you say we don't have enough water? And I don't know how close you're to that, but I would imagine it must be very close because we've had all these very dry years. But I keep wondering that every meeting I sit in on, I'm saying all this planning, there's so much expense going on. Does anybody think that there is a limit from the wells you have, the groundwater you have, the imported water you can get, where you're going to have to say we just don't have enough water? But the people will all be here. It'll all be developed. I'm thinking of a horror story coming up on our area because of what I'm hearing, just like tonight, too. A lot of it was like, wow. But anyway, I appreciate all you're doing, but I do have grave concerns about what's really going to happen to our area if we don't actually say there's a finite amount of water that is available for development. And can anyone there answer my question?
Is that the end of your comment, Ms. Noldemeyer?
Yes, that's my question right now, if anyone can answer it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. We appreciate your concern, and that's really an issue that you need to bring to Water Resources Committee. This is engineering and operations, so we don't deal with that that part of the operation in this committee, but thank you very much. With that, we move on to item 12, general report on engineering services. After what we've gone through, I don't know what you've got left.
I got a lot. I still have a lot. Thank you very much, Chair Cooper. We do have some. First, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank the IT and Liz for the new process that we've been working on. I really do like this process. I think it works very well. It's interesting, and we're making little adjustments. If you notice, when we give a presentation or when the remote staff give a presentation, they now let their face appear for everyone to see before they bring up the slideshow or the slide presentation, which can take their face off of the screen. So it's good. Lets the public see who is doing the work and the project managers as they present. And I think it gives a little insight into the agency. So that's a nice change to see. And little adjustments like that that we're able to make on the fly is due to the staff we have. So I really appreciate them. We do have an item that we are going to be taking directly to the April 19th board meeting, and that has to do with that Valley Center well change order that I talked about previously. That our concern is if we were trying to bring it to committee, the change order just came to light and we just had the amount. So we weren't going to make it onto this committee meeting. And if we don't go right away to the board meeting, then we would potentially face delay claims from the contractor. It was a necessary part of the project, as you will hear in the presentation at the full board, but I wanted to let you know why we were not bringing it to this committee to analyze first. We did talk to Chairman Cooper to ask his permission to move it directly to the full board before we took that action.
And it's a significant amount of money. So it's
It's approximately 10% of the total project cost. We are doing well on our master plan. Wednesday was the last day for consultant questions. We have a lot of consultant activity interested in that master plan. I really am anxious to see when those come back in. They will be, we will be receiving the proposals at the end of this month, and then there will be a lot of review to do. And so we will have that across the board. There will be a lot of different people reviewing that from water resources, operations, engineering, all looking at that master planning document and the benefit it can provide for us, making sure we're selecting the best consultant for that role. So that will be coming up to a future E&O, most likely June E&O, if we can get them reviewed. And depending on how the interviews or if we go to an interview cycle, it's possible, depending on what we receive and how the interviews go, that we don't come until the July E&O. That's putting us in a tight time frame because we are trying to get that master plan completely accomplished within 1 year. So that is going to be interesting if the consultants can meet that schedule. Liz, if you want to go to the slideshow presentation. So for the slideshow, periodically, I told you I would bring forward the maps, and to clarify the comment earlier, Director Planbeck, yes, Wiley Canyon will have to have a water supply assessment based off the number of units, but that request has to come from the county. That's in the city, so that'll have to come from the city as part of their environmental review, so they will have to get far enough in planning that the city will ask us to prepare that document. That's the normal process. We are looking at how to provide service, and that's separately a assessment of sub-area master plan on how, what size pipelines, what pump station improvements, reservoir storage would be required in order to provide service to that site. That project is hasn't been moving forward. I do not believe they paid for that review yet, so we haven't seen anything movement on that project yet. I looked it up on the map to make sure I knew where I was at and I answered properly. next slide, please, Liz. These are our capital improvement projects, a lot of which we've talked about. You see the wells all along the river basin highlighted because a lot of those wells are being, something is being done with those wells. Either there's treatment, usually a combined treatment, or improvement to the well itself, as Mike had mentioned. So a lot of projects across the valley. I think we've spread our work out pretty well to benefit all of the residents within this community, and focus a lot on water supply at the moment. Next slide, please. So we have a series of slides on development. These are just highlighting the various projects that we are working on through these different areas. Next slide, please, Liz. Skyline Ranch project that we've talked about before is moving along. They're actually going into their last few phases. We've had some DDW issues with the storm drain. The storm drain throughout that subdivision, unfortunately, was installed a little shallow, and it creates a lot of problems for a water system when we are even close in the same elevation of the storm drain. It means we've had to go under it. The good news is our relationship with DDW has greatly improved, and we are able to meet with them on a regular basis. And when we submit the recommendations for a crossing underneath the storm drain, we understand the parameters that are required. And generally speaking, they've been turning around those recommendations in as little as 2 weeks, accepting our engineering and moving those projects forward. And that's a real benefit to develop that relationship. That's a lot of hard work from Ryan Bai. He is coordinating directly with DDW and does an excellent job at that, of keeping everybody on task, but also developing a relationship with an external agency that is critical to our process. So I wanted to highlight and mention him in this meeting.
So, is this identifying the Ned Canyon
mutual? They are not. We did continue to meet with them, and we do talk to New Mint Mutual to see how they would come in. They don't have the financing to be able to do that, and we continue to ask the state if there's any monies available. But currently, they are focused on the disadvantaged communities, and New Mint does not qualify under those parameters. And so they will have to come in with some of their own money in order to make improvements to their system for us to be able to serve them. They already have a 2-inch meter, so realistically, it's just adding additional services and then improving their own water system. I don't think they're going to get to a point where we can take over their water system without a very significant investment in the infrastructure on their site. So my best recommendation currently would be for them to look at purchasing a new meter, but even that is a high cost item they would have to get approval for, just from a capacity fee perspective. Spring Canyon is moving forward. They've come to us. Obviously, we are working on that sewer lift station in addition to the on-site subdivision. So they are moving forward with that project. They are moving forward with an MOU between us, the city, and the county that allows us to transfer that sewer lift station over. And I'm happy to say that that is making progress as it moves along. So hopefully we will be able to, in the next couple of years, relieve ourselves of that sewer lift station and hopefully get out of the sewer business soon. Next slide, please. So here's where the Wiley Canyon, the 561, we passed the magic 500 number for the water supply assessment. This is what I was able to look up to be able to answer your question. And then the Adlin Hills and the Lyons Canyon development are both also working with us at various levels to gain approval. Needham Ranch has been moving forward for some time now. They are well into phase two, and they're building the second tank on site. The second tank is necessary for them to start to gain occupancy and to allow water service to the new buildings in phase two. We are holding them to that. So they have to finish that tank first. So it's moving along. Next slide, please. Vista Canyon's nearing completion, and we are working diligently to get them recycled water. There's a lot of projects that have to happen. Unfortunately, we have a pipeline that needs to go through a bridge, and currently there's an owl living in that bridge. So we are working. Yeah, we can't catch a break on that. So we are working with the environmentalists. We're going to go take a look at that owl's nest. It is not an endangered species, but that doesn't mean you can simply kick them out once they find a place to nest. We have to accommodate them. We have to see if there's eggs in that nest. What we've been told by the environmentalists is typically owls nest in multiple locations. So it may be possible still to move them, to move that project forward. If this is our own in-house, this is what Rick Bergutz has been telling us, that, and they have an on-call, I'm not sure who it is on the environmentalist. No, and we will, absolutely. The environmentalists are bringing Fish and Game out. We will not do anything without the okay of Fish and Game, for sure. So we are going to take a look at that and see what we can do, but it may cause a delay in that project. I would say it's certainly going to cause a delay. It's how much of a delay does it cause? So we will bring that with more information and photos of the camper in our bridge deck. next slide, please. So I wanted to show you what's going on with the Five Point Development Newhall Ranch. This is from January of 2021. You can see a bunch of graded lots. This is a Mission Village Phase 1. It's got a lot of labels on there about, trying to show you where Magic Mountain is and those the other sites out there. I think what a difference a year makes. Liz, next slide, please. So this is it now. We have a city built out there. There are many, many condos. We are having occupancies built, and we're moving on to the multiple phases of that project. So when you talk about how busy we are on the CIP side, and I just like to highlight, we are also busy on the development side. There has been a lot of growth in this valley, and it is important to stay diligent and having our inspectors out there to monitor what goes in. Not only our inspectors, but they're working as consultant managers, because we have multiple construction consultings doing inspection full-time out there, paid for by the developers, to make sure that all of the standards are met on the pipeline that is installed, and that they will hopefully last a very long time. The last thing I have, that was my last slide, is I wanted to say thank you to the board on the cost of living increase that you recently approved. It's very nice that you acknowledge staff and you acknowledge what we have and you keep us current. Our staff is working hard for this agency, and I really appreciate those votes on the cost of living and moving that forward. So thank you very much on behalf of staff.
Hey, are there any public comments, Liz?
Seeing none.
Very good. Any comments by directors?
Just thank you, Courtney, for the presentation.
Director Ford.
Just a quick one. Having to dealt with owls on projects before, the usual methodology is if they've nested, you have to wait till the little guys fledge, and then your biologist tacks up chicken wire to keep them out from coming back home. So I don't know about the timing of that, but that's what you have to look forward to, Courtney, on that one, if they manage to actually use the nest.
Yeah, and our understanding is if they manage to use the nest, then it'll be after August before that project will move forward.
Okay. And the other thing we wanted to say, too, is the cost of living, the praise goes both ways. That's why this board's very happy with, I think, what the staff has done. And we know it's a tough economic times out there, and so we want to keep people here. All right. Thank you.
I'll give you another owl. When I was managing the Deamer plant down in Orange County, there are two very tall washwater tanks, and you're up on top of a hill where the plant is down in North Olinda. And one of the guys came in one day and he said, I needed to go up on top of the tank. And he said, halfway up, there's a little landing. He says, an owl is nested there. And I said, well, leave him alone. Leave him alone. And a little while later, a guy comes in and he comes in and he says, I had to go up the other tank. And he said, there's a hawk that's nested on the little landing going up there, and they've got a nest. And I said, no, I think it's an owl. He said, no, this one's a great big hawk. And so sure enough, it was a hawk on one and an owl on the other. And this is up on top of a hill, and it was a tank that's about probably 60, 70 feet tall. So it's a real tall tank. So we had to have FAA lights on top of the tank, and the light had gone out. So for airplanes, so we had to figure out how are we going to get up there to change the light. And the environmentalist said, you can't touch them. They've got nests, they've got eggs, and we had to bring a huge crane out to get people up to the top of the tank to change the light bulb.
I just want to say, if we didn't cut all the trees down, we might nest in the
trees. Well, this is right on the side of Chino Hills State Park, so they have plenty of places to go. With that, anything else for
just one quick comment. So, Mr. Mayor, I think we know that in the Finance Committee that that percentage was lower and was kicked up to the 5.5. And it just shows our appreciation for the presentation you and Mr. Alvord, your staff has done. We were very happy with your work. So that definitely deserves recognition. Thank you. That's all.
Excellent. Very good. Well, the next item is adjournment, and I thank you all for coming this evening. Mr. Campbell, thanks for filling in for the boss over there tonight. And and Liz, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
For coordinating everything, as always.